Hi, I'm Ashley Eicher.
I'm Hunter Kelly.
And welcome to an all-new episode of the All Our Favorite People podcast. This week, we have one of our favorite people, Brittany Spencer.
Yes, Brittany Spencer. So I've known her for quite a while now, but it's amazing to watch her just really step into the spotlight this year. A lot of great things have been happening for Brittany. The release of her EP, Compassion.
Which is so good.
So good and so just honest. I mean, I just love her. We talk about honesty a lot in country music, and this is really like living it out in a big way.
Oh, 100%. And she was recently asked by Maren Morris and Amanda Shires to come sing with them anytime the High Women's live performances resume. Yeah. Because she did a cover of it was Crowded Table, right?
Yeah, it was Crowded Table. And she put it on the socials and they saw it. And so the day before we recorded this, she was actually in a writing session with Jason Isbell, Amanda Shires, and Maren Morris. So
Brittany is so unbelievably talented. She's what I love about this EP, Compassion, is she does not shy away from things that need to be said. And I think that's so important right now in the world that we're living in. So we talk a lot about that, but we also talk about what it was like for her growing up as a Black child, not seeing herself represented really in country music, but she loved country music and wanted to sing it.
Yeah.
And so there's just a really great conversation in here. And she's so honest about what that was like for her. I just loved it. I love her honesty. I just love her. That's it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we actually, this one, there was actually about 15 more minutes at the end that I edited out just because it was like, we were just by the end of this talking as friends. And I'd connected with her before. I think this was really y'all's first time talking.
Well, we've talked over Twitter and Instagram a little bit, but this was our first real sit down conversation with each other.
Yes.
So it really was, you know, while you guys have known each other for a long time, thanks to Twitter and the Turnip Truck.
Oh yeah. The Turnip Truck.
What a blessing. This was really you're kind of getting to hear Brittany and I really kind of become friends throughout this conversation, which is really fun.
And now y'all have each other's numbers and there's texting happening. Oh.
Well, now we're going to have a wine night. That's just what we've decided. That's what we've decided. And Hunter will DJ it.
Yes.
But yeah, she's just awesome. So I feel like we should just get right to it.
Yes, here it is, our season finale for this season.
Here she is, Brittany Spencer. Brittany Spencer, welcome.
Hello, Brittany. Oh my gosh. So it's been so crazy watching you. I mean, everything that happened in the last few months with you. Of course, I've been talking to you on Twitter for like maybe a year or two now.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about what I just saw, which is it actually happened that you in your journey of becoming a High Woman actually met up and wrote with Jason Isbell, Amanda Shires, and Maren Morris.
Which is crazy.
What happened? Incredible. Tell us everything you're allowed to.
I don't know if there's anything I'm not allowed to. I don't know how this happened. they're kind and wonderful. And of course, we know they're talented people. It kind of started on Twitter. I think it started with Amanda, actually. I posted a cover of the High Women's Crowded Table. And I posted it on Instagram and I didn't post it on Twitter. So 2 days later, because I try to do like the whole, you know, like posts, you know, on all the different places. But I just did what I've been doing for years. I mean, I just like to sing and I just like to write. And you never really think that like the artists are going to like see what's going on. You just do it because you love it. I just watched their performance on Jimmy Fallon and I just thought, this is so beautiful. How wonderful. You know, I live in a studio apartment. So like pandemic has been like a little rough for me. It was great for like the five first months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, shoot, I'm not that much of a recluse. Anyway, posted the video and Amanda responded and she was just kind and told me to come sing with them next time they sing, you know, whenever that happens again. And then I was like, oh, my goodness, this is insane. Oh, my Lord. And I was like able to like maintain myself at least a little bit, like as much as you can maintain yourself, mm-hmm. you know. And then I like calmed down. And then Maren posts like an hour or two later. And I'm just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Is that like allowed?
We don't care.
It's okay. Yeah. I'll bleep out any F words. But other than that, we're fine.
I'll be sure to say the F word a dozen times.
We'll pray about it later. It's fine.
But yeah, we met online. We met on Twitter.
But I feel like when you released that, they had tweeted, so they tweeted back so quickly. Like, mm-hmm. it was within a couple of hours, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so fast. And I think that's why, like, I wasn't able to keep up mentally. You know, it takes me a while to process things like that. Not that I would know how I would process something like that, you know, until that moment. And, yeah, I mean, from there, someone had posted a video that I had on YouTube. It's just like a little video. It's like, I think maybe less than 1,000 views on it. But someone posted it and they tagged Amanda and they said she writes too. And so then Amanda like slid in my DMs and she's like, so you write? And I'm like, yeah, hi. I write songs. I like music. Hi, I'm Brittany. And yeah. And then we started emailing and then we started texting and then we picked a date. And then she's like, well, Maren's going to come too if she like is able. And I'm like, okay, cool. And so you just don't know what to expect. And it was, I guess I'm trying to find words. It's funny. How do I write songs? And it happened yesterday.
I was just say, you just feel like you're kind of trying to process it all. Like you said, it takes you a while to process. Do you feel it has today been like attempting to process what yesterday was?
Kind of. Yeah. I'm trying to do that. I've kind of been working all day today. Like I had a writing session and just did a few other things that I need to do with work. And so I've processed, but like, honestly, there's such good people that it just brings it all down to earth. And that's what I love. I'm always like the person that's like, I don't want to let my highs get me too high. I don't want to let my lows get me too low. I want to be as balanced as possible. And they're just so kind and, you know, and normal that it's just like, okay, cool. I wrote with some friends and we wrote a song that we all like. And I want to let other people have their moment too. I feel like the people that follow me that have been there for, you know, a hot second, if it kind of feels like, It doesn't, you know, it's not just your journey anymore where people kind of get excited. And I'm like, oh, this is fun. I like watching other people get excited because I don't feel like it's really just my journey, if I'm honest.
That was yesterday because Hunter sent me the tweet. He's like, have you seen this yet? And I was like, what?
I know, right?
Mostly because I'd been on a shoot all day and I wasn't looking at my phone. So I just got so excited for you when I saw it. It's sort of like Hunter was saying earlier, it's like, you know, when we're following people that we really enjoy and great things happen. It's so fun.
It reminds me so much because Brittany, I first got to know you, of course, like you were just kind of like, I'd hear your songs on Twitter and then I'd see you. And then you ended up like you worked at the turnip truck where I would come and like get smoothies. We went from like, oh, I know you on Twitter to like, oh my gosh, okay, this is you. And it reminds me so much of when I worked at Starbucks in Green Hills back in like 2004. And I just remember this, a friend of mine, well, he would come in all the time. And then once I started in the music industry, he works with India Arie. So India Arie was doing a recording session with Rascal Flatts. And so I went and like got to, he like had me come hang out. And so I just know what that meant to me. So I'm so excited to like watch you. You move to town, you have your plan, and now just all of this, your EP's out, Compassion. For me, it's just so exciting to watch your journey from that perspective. It's very exciting. You know who else worked at Turnip Truck?
You could say Sturgill Simpson.
Yeah. You know that.
He's like a legend at Turnip Truck.
Is
like,
he?
Yeah, he is. Like the employees be like, you know, Sturgill Simpson worked here. Like as soon as they found out, like my coworkers, when they found out that I moved here to write and sing country music, they're like, oh, well, you know about Sturgill Simpson. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
You just hear that like 20 more times over the course of like a year.
I bet you did.
Incredible.
I know, right? Well, I thought about you and Sturgill because I think, I mean, I guess Sturgill might have like checked me out. I go to all the turnip trucks. It's just like a, you know.
It's an addictive place. I still go there.
Like, oh, yeah.
I don't know why I do it, but I do. I pass like 5 grocery stores to get there, but I will still drive there. It's just, I like it.
Yeah,
I like really it. There's really great smoothies. Yeah. They have really great smoothies.
Yeah, and just the prepared foods are great. I love, you know, it's just like you can grab stuff and go, and you know it's going to be quality and taste good. But no, I guess I just...
I love that you have talked about a tour day turnip truck.
Well, no, because that's where I first met Brittany. So we don't.
Well, I know. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I remember our first conversation.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, that's you. Okay. Yeah.
Because we had already like met online kind of.
Yeah.
And then when you came to Turnip Truck and like got a smoothie, we just started talking. We started talking about the show Insecure. And I was like, oh, yeah, I like him.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I do remember that. And usually when I come in there, I come from the gym. So God knows what kind of state I was in.
You're probably less cranky. So that's good.
Well, and that's the thing. Okay. So on your Compassion EP, which Compassion is, you know, the title track and the first song that's out.
It's so good.
But the first line about being hangry, it really puts it in perspective for me because that's like, you know, I just lose my mind. But then I think about just the people who don't have like the food insecurity, and especially, you know, with Compassion, with what we're dealing with this year, seeing like the lines for food banks being so long, you see people falling into food insecurity. That line just gets me so much. Mm-hmm. And I know that Ashley would feel the same way about Compassion. So I'm wondering about that song in particular, how it came to be, and also kind of the new meaning it might have taken on this year, which, you know, this is one of the most difficult years that we've lived through.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a rough year. But I think I wrote this song 2 years ago. I was on the plane coming back from the UK. I was singing background vocals for a group called United Pursuit. And we had just done like a 2 or 3 week just kind of tour of the UK. And I just enjoyed my time there. And I thought, oh, wow, this is so fun. And everyone was, not everyone, but like most people were like, you know, warm and kind. It wasn't as good as Germany because in Germany, I got proposed to 3 times. So I really like that.
Oh, my gosh. So you're going to be seriously touring Germany is what you're saying.
You're telling me I need to go to Germany is what you're saying.
I mean, go, girl. Because once that second proposal happened, I was like, the hell? Why am I in the U.S.? What's going on here? Because this does not happen to me in North Nashville.
I love you're like, look at me. Hold on, wait a second.
Look at me. It was just a different vibe. And it was just like, it was way more laid back. And maybe that's just because, you know, on tour, I don't feel like you really get the experience of the actual cities that you're in. Because you're going to all the fun parts, you know, yeah. When you're on tour, you're just there for a day or two. But I did that. It was a combination of just being on the plane, coming back to the U.S. from U.K. And also I recently learned that at that time, I think it was like less than 40% of Americans had passports. I don't know what the number is now, but then it was like 37-38%, I think. And I just thought, damn, everybody has an opinion about how the world should run, though. But hardly any of us have seen it.
Yeah.
And so I just tried to take ordinary everyday occurrences and kind of parallel them with big events that happen in the world to kind of hopefully draw up a different perspective and produce just even just a slither more empathy for people in situations that we'll never meet. And so that was the goal for that song, and kind of hearing it now in the middle of a pandemic where literally your well-being is contingent on someone else's.
Yeah.
The people we look down on, the homeless people that we think aren't worth anything, well, they're lying on the benches that your kids might play at, you know? You know, you need to care about their well-being. Mm-hmm. If they're healthy, it increases your chance for being healthy as well. In the middle of a pandemic, that was important for me. I mean, even the second verse kind of talks about protests, where protesters are, I can't even put into words just how demonized protesters are right now. And I'm thinking, man, everything about this country is because somebody protested.
Amen.
Everything since the formation of this country is about people taking a stand for something, people challenging rules, people challenging laws. That's how we get new ones. That's how we make a more perfect union. That's anything we have is because somebody fought for it and spoke up. And so the idea that we still haven't caught on to history in that way, and we still find ourselves falling on the wrong side of it. It's just hard, and I just like to put that into songs, and hopefully in a way that's not too preachy, but just kind of spelling things out a little bit. And I don't want to do that on every song, but you know, especially with this being my first EP, I do wanted to let it, you know, be known. Hey, I protest. Give a damn about a few things.
Yeah.
I just want people to know right up front who I am and what I stand for. So they're not surprised.
But I think that's one of the things I love about this song. I was listening. There's two things I was thinking of as you were talking. First of all, I love this song when I first heard it. And as you're talking about it, Like, there's something about you that reminds me of India Arie, who is just one of my favorite artists of all time, and several of the records that she's made, and that she would sing about things, and she still does, sing about things that matter, and making me think a little bit deeper. And what I loved about this song, I think one of the things that has been so frustrating for me this year is watching people that I respected and love and care about say just horrible things about other people online, people that they don't know, that they've never met, like just not having empathy for another person. Like, and I think that's just been hard to see. Like, you know, I feel like if we would sit down and just learn from, like, sit down and have a conversation with each other and like listen to your experience, like where you've been, and Hunter's experience where he's been, and my experience where I've been, like, there's something really beautiful in our common humanity.
Isn't there the line in Compassion about, you know, learning something new about somebody you thought you had figured out? You wrote that 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about, I guess, people that you thought we had figured out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like there's just so many stereotypes, and we will hear a certain saying, or we'll see a certain person, we'll see what they're wearing. We'll see whatever demographic that, you know, we've kind of categorized into this other category. We think we haven't figured out. We think we know what they want. We think we know their intentions. We think all kinds of things. And it's just, most of it is actually just wrong. So that's where it came from for me. I've been on the receiving end of it most of my life, where people just say things, and sometimes they think it's a compliment, but it's actually just not. You know, when we try to judge people by how they look, when we try to judge people by their job, by their, I don't know, any external factor, we usually get it wrong. And if you just have a conversation with somebody, you know, you might be really delighted to find yourself being proven wrong. It's so fun to find out you were wrong about somebody, especially if it's just, you know, this really great thing. You find out they're actually a cool person.
Yeah.
But you won't know because you won't even open your damn mouth and talk to them.
Well, I think that's the thing too. And we had a conversation a few weeks ago about just how to, you know, online stuff. Like, and I think that's where we miss so much of it. And because in the comments, you're detached. It's not a person you're talking to. It's a keyboard and a screen. So I think there is so much there about like having actual conversations with people, but it's, you know, seems harder to do. Well, especially in the pandemic, but social media though, I think we're exposed to a lot more than, you know, it's crazy because it's like all the stuff that's happening in the world is like hyper. And we're like getting way more of it than we can process as humans, I think.
Absolutely. We're completely overstimulated.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, when I first like decided that I was going to like not just be in writing rooms, but that I was going to really go for artistry, like one of the first questions I asked myself was, does anybody need to hear this? Like, I can, do I need to make an album? Like, I know that I'm personally fulfilled, but am I saying something that means anything? Like, that was a really important question that I asked myself. I just, we're so overstimulated. So many people putting out music. It's so many people talking and doing things. And so I just try to be intentional with the things that I do.
But I think when you're singing from your heart and you're writing about your experience or where you connect, like, that's what shines through. That's what people connect to. Like, it's what I connect to in listening to the EP.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad that we did it.
Okay. I'm like, girl, just go ahead. Make me some more EPs. I'll take it.
Yes. No, I just love hearing you say that, Brittany, because it shows. And listening to, I think it was on Basic Folk, another podcast that you were on, I was really impressed by your intentionality in moving to Nashville and pursuing country music, that you said that there was not any aspect of it that you hadn't thought out. And a big part of that is that, and especially when you move to Nashville to pursue country music, there's a reason that you're being hailed as a trailblazer in a lot of ways at this point, because you're a Black woman. And so I look back on the reason that I was earlier bringing up, like, I went to see, through a friend of mine at that Starbucks who was a producer, I went to see Rascal Flatts perform on India Arie's record, like back in like 2005 or 2006 in the studio. And it surprised me that India was a Rascal Flatts fan and listened to them all the time. Now, through a lot of like Reese Palmer's Color Me Country, in looking back on just really how R&B music, folk music, and country music were all just kind of made up in the 20s, and we've been kind of segregated apart music-wise because of marketing in a lot of ways. And it just takes a lot of inner strength and vision for you to have done what you did and make that decision to come to Nashville. So I would like to know, when you did, what were you talking about with that, like the process of like, okay, I feel like I need to be in country music and I'm going to go do it. What were some of the questions that you asked yourself and that your family asked of you?
Yeah, I feel like it was years long of a process. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, and it's a predominantly Black city. And NDIRE was the only Black woman that I saw with guitar. Mm. And her lyricism is out of this world. Mm-hmm. And I think I know the Rascal Flatts NDIRE song you're talking about. Is it?
It was on her record. Yeah.
It was Summer.
I think.
My heart is frozen in this place. Yeah, I know that album. I think it was the Voyage to India album.
Yeah.
I think Volume 2. I remember that album, and I remember, by that time, I had already fallen in love with country music. Like, I'm a latecomer to country. I didn't even know what country was until I was like 14, 15 years old.
Because your first introduction was the Chicks, right?
Yeah, my introduction was the Chicks. A friend of mine at church down in the hood, her name was Keisha, and she was like, you need to listen to, well, then Dixie Chicks. And I'm like, what the hell is a Dixie? So then I'm like, okay, cool. And I listened to it. And there, I don't remember what album it was. I don't know what song it was. I just remember how I felt. And I remember listening to the songs, looking at the album cover, and they sounded like a quartet to me. Like, they sounded like church. You know, I grew up in Apostolic Church. And so, you know, we love harmonies, you know, and I guess any church loves harmonies, but I loved it. I just fell in love. And when I heard NDIRE, it just connected for me. But for me, really, from the time that I decided that I wanted to do country music, it took years before I felt like I could actually do it. My mom, I think, was the first person to believe in me. She knows I'm not like really big on stuff. Like, I didn't even want to go to my graduation from high school. I think it's funny to say now, but then like all the girls always want to wear dresses. I didn't. I wore some dress pants like that I got like from a $10 store or something, like something I like rushed and picked up. But my mom, she got me a class ring, and because she knew I didn't do it. I didn't take class pictures or anything because I'm just not into that type of stuff. But my mom is, and she got me a class ring, and it had a cowboy boot on one side and a cowboy hat on the other side. She brought me my first pair of cowboy boots, and she just believed in me when I didn't. She knew how much I love country music. She watched me watch CMT. She just watched me for years, and I didn't think I could actually do it. And so the conversation she had with me was that she always knew that I would leave. That's the conversation my mom has always had with me since I was a teen. She said, God told me you're not going to be with me for a long time. She's like, you're going to leave. And I didn't know what that meant. I was like, oh, what's she talking about? Like, I'm just chilling. And she reminds me of that conversation to this day. So it took years for me to actually believe that I could do it. But my dad, when I finally decided to do it, there wasn't a conversation that I need to have with my mom. She already knew. My dad, his conversation with me was one of protection. He was like, are you sure you don't want to go to Atlanta? Those white people don't want you down there in Nashville. He was like, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to put yourself in danger? You know, that was the conversation my dad had with me because he's protective. He's the kind of person where every time I talk to him, he always reminds me to lock my car door, to make sure that I just hurry up and get into my apartment and turn the key right behind myself, or, you know, well, I guess not turn key, turn the knob. He's that person. You know, he's always concerned about my safety. And to this day, he's concerned about my safety. When I told my mom and my sister that I was going to go protest this past year, well, I guess this year, they were really, like, my sister was really upset at me. She said, why would you do that? Why would you go protest in the South? Why would you do that? Like, they're genuinely concerned about my safety. So the conversation about me and country music, it's not just one. I've been having this for years. And while I don't feel like my safety is at risk, my family at times, they still think that. And I just try to, you know, take little precautions. But they're so happy for me. Every time I send send them my songs or show them what's going on. You know, I'm like, Mom, I was in Rolling Stone. I'm like, Dad, I was in Billboard.
That's crazy.
Like, he's like, what is a what's a high woman? And I said, don't worry about it. I was in Billboard, Dad.
I love it. Thank you guys so much for listening to the All Our Favorite People podcast. If you like what you hear, go check out the All Our Favorite People community on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. And for as little as $3 a month, you can help us keep the podcast growing as we add live shows and events.
We're also offering you exclusive access into planning episodes, as well as off-the-cuff interactive bonus content that we just can't fit into the show. You'll find out who's coming on the show first and possibly get a shout out on the podcast.
I don't know why I wanted to laugh at you just then. Check it out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. You mentioned this, like, growing up and watching CMT. And so what was it like knowing that you wanted to do country music, but not seeing Black women represented well on CMT or in country music? What was that like for you, not seeing representation?
Is why I wasted so much time thinking I couldn't do this. I spent years thinking I couldn't do this because I didn't see anybody that looked like me or sounded like me. And race was a huge part of it, but also it was other things. Like, I'm not from the South. I guess Maryland is technically the first state below the Mason-Dixie line, but Baltimore is very urban. I mean, I can drive 15 minutes from my house and be in the country. Mm-hmm. That's possible. I can definitely do that. But, you know, it, that geographical, you know, lack of diversity or just sonic diversity. You know, there's, when I was growing up, like, I love poetry. There wasn't a lot of poetry that I was always seeing on TV. I remember the first time I heard some poetry, I was like, oh my gosh, it was Whiskey Lullaby. And it was so poetic. And I love Brad Paisley. Alison Krauss is incredible. And I heard them, and it's still one of my favorite songs to this day. But it was just like all these different things that I felt like made me so different. But, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know that what makes you different just makes you more appealing. Or just, you know, it just puts you on a different track, but you learn a few more things when you're a little too different.
And what is the song on the EP, No, It's Damn Right You're Wrong, where you talk about coming into a place of speaking, being more, I guess, more assertive about your point of view? This is something that we have talked about quite a bit on this show, especially with Mickey Guyton, who we had on last year. And it was last year when we first really started talking to her about her identity as a Black woman. And it really at first felt uncomfortable because it was something that for so long, it was just like, you know, Mickey had been told, like, well, don't
people talk about it.
People can see that you're Black. You don't have to talk about it.
Well, and I also think people saying to us as, you know, interviewers, and luckily with this show, we can do whatever we want because it's ours. But, you know, the common kind of thing was, we just don't talk about this. Like, we don't want to make people uncomfortable and don't ask artists about it. And so,
and I'm unpacking a lot of this too. I'm reading Barack Obama's book right now, Promised Land, which I cannot recommend enough because, well, he's just an amazing writer. But, you know, in having this conversation that we've had this year about race and Black Lives Matter in a way that we haven't before, I've been looking back on, so I voted for a Black man twice for president. It's at the highest office in the land. And so it's fascinating to me and also illuminating for me to read in Obama's book that even he said when he was president, I knew that white people could only take so much talk about race before they got really defensive and shut down and wanted to just stop. So I hear in Damn Right You're Wrong, having it be a change for you as well, you know, because you were here in Nashville before we started having this conversation as well, working. So I'm just wondering, where is that reflected on the Compassion EP, and how have you felt yourself change in being able to, you know, talk about race in a way that you maybe didn't feel comfortable before as a country artist?
Well, Damn Right You're Wrong is a song about, like, adult peer pressure and like fluctuating self-esteem and all these different things. I mean, for me, it becomes applicable for so many things. It could be because I'm a Black woman doing country music. It could be because I'm not a size 2. You know, all these different things that I've watched kind of Count Me Out periodically throughout my life. When it comes to race, I moved here telling myself that I would not talk about race. Mm-hmm. And I would make myself so uncomfortable by trying to give, honestly, by trying to give white people the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And I'll elaborate. My first month here in Nashville, I was working, like I've always worked in like healthcare or something, or being in customer service. And I was at work, and my coworker, who was right across from me, it's just me and her in the room. She tells me that I'm not like other black people. She's like, other black people are N-words. And I was like, what? I was like, what are you talking about? And she goes on to try and explain herself. And I'm just like, I'm like shocked, first of all. I'm from Baltimore. Like, I don't watch this type of stuff happen. Like, it's never happened to me. And I've gone to white schools most of my life because I grew up being classically trained all through middle and high school. So I was always like one of the few, if not the only black person in the room. But no one has ever been that bold to me before. Mm-hmm. But when she said it, like, I was taken aback so far. But I heard her out, and I was so uncomfortable. But she then invited me to come and see her kids' like softball game. And I was like, okay, cool. And I went. And this is, it's so crazy. I look back at myself and I'm like, Brittany, what the hell are you doing? But I wanted to give this lady the benefit of the doubt. So I show up to the game, and she has her friend there, and her friend, I think one of the kids had hit me or tapped me or something, because he just wanted to like play with my phone or something silly. And my coworker's friend says, oh, don't be going and bothering her. She'll get all Shanae on you. And like, Shanae is a character from one of my favorite shows, Martin. And I just looked at her and I'm just like, what is wrong with y'all? Like, I was just taken aback. And during that time, that was also when Trayvon Martin was happening, like, mm-hmm. all the court cases. I was watching the court case at work in the room with that same coworker. I would have my headphones on, and every time there was a trial case or a court day, whatever you call it, I watched it. So I'm having all of these conflicting thoughts. You know, I'm like, I just moved to Nashville, and I decided that I didn't want to talk about race. But then I'm having my awakening at the same time, because Trayvon Martin was my awakening to social justice. And then the whole thing with my coworkers happening all at once. And then at the same time, I'm teaching myself how to play guitar, and I'm writing songs, and I'm keeping it at the forefront of my brain that I moved here to write country music. And in country music, you don't talk about or act like you're black. And so I think I got tired. I got really tired of giving people the benefit of the doubt and trying to think, oh, they weren't being racist. They were just not being kind, or they don't know. They're ignorant. They need to be taught. I got tired of doing that. I got tired of being the black friend. Mm. You know, I wasn't that to a lot of people, but I got tired of it. I mean, when I was sitting in publishers' rooms and they basically just didn't get me, mm-hmm. I got tired. I got tired of microaggressions. I got tired of people asking me in demo sessions, can you sound more like insert any white male country artist? I'm like, no, I can't sound like them.
Yeah. But
at the time, I'm like, try.
And also, I don't want to.
At the time, I just wanted to try. I'll try anything once. Like, that's my personality. I'm like, oh, sure, I'll try anything once. But after a while, I just got tired. And at some point, I recognized how irresponsible it was for me to not take responsibility of my own space. Mm-hmm. It was just irresponsible. It's just, at some point in time, being naive is just, it's just careless. It means I don't care about myself. It means I don't care about anything that I'm doing. So why would I expect you to care about me?
There's so much to say there, because, you know, in country music, we always talk about authenticity and being who you are and being true to yourself. But I watched, you know, I think really Kane Brown over time was able to just be himself. But I think we've watched Mickey for so long have to feel like, oh my gosh, hyper prove why she deserves to be in country music. And so just hearing you talk about your love of poetry, the melodies, the storytelling, that's why this kind of music appeals to you. And I haven't talked about this very much, but you know, it's so funny, because it was really weird to watch Mickey have to like bend over backwards to prove why she sonically belonged in country music, and then watch other male artists be able to go and rap and have hip hop beats and all this kind of stuff. Whereas I felt like at that time, you know, if Mickey had wanted to do that, and this is just me talking, but if Mickey had wanted to do that, it would have been like, oh, well, then you are over in R&B or hip hop.
Not country enough is a very real thing. I don't I don't have those inner monologues anymore with myself. I think, is this me enough?
Yeah.
That's what I think. Is this real enough? Is it true enough? Is it story enough? Is it, you know, I just... I've thrown that question out, but it was there for years. And I can only imagine, like, that was my inner dialogue for years when, you know, when no one knew who I was. I mean, people still don't know who I am. But I can't imagine Mickey being signed and having a major record deal and constantly having that question within herself, but then other people probably having that question as well as they listen to something she just put her heart and soul into make. I can't even imagine that. And everything that she's getting, she absolutely deserves. She's incredible. She is as kind as people would perceive her to be when they see her from afar.
How did you go from that inner dialogue of saying, is this country enough, to your inner dialogue of saying, is this me enough?
Yeah, I went to MTSU and I used to like make that hike between Murfreesboro and Nashville, which I hated. I'm still traumatized by it, but I used to make that hike every week several times to be in school, but also to come here and do rights and do all the things, all the Grammy EDU, all the CMA EDU, all the things, like just everything that was happening here in addition to co-writes. But after a while, like kind of close to when I was graduating college in, I think, December of 2017, the people that I would write with often, like my little pod, all of them had either moved away or they decided they didn't want to do country music anymore. And so that was like a breaking point for me where I was like, oh, I can take a break. I can figure out what it is that I want to say in my writing. I can decide on what's happening with me in artistry. It was a critical time for me because it gave me a time to pull away and figure out a whole bunch of things. And during that time, I learned a lot about myself because I was intentional about it. I don't know, maybe for some people, they stumble upon kind of figuring out who they are. That didn't happen for me. I had to be very intentional about it. And it was during that time where I realized, I don't know, for whatever reason, I just grew out of giving a damn about so many different things. And one of them was, I guess the things that we're talking about right now, where I was just tired of being weighed down. And it doesn't mean that I constantly want to tell everybody all my views or tell everybody all my thoughts and how I see the world. And it doesn't mean that. It just means I'm tired of people kind of projecting their views on me and telling me what I should think, telling me what I should feel. And I don't know, I got tired of it. I don't know, during that time of doing nothing and not being in the hustle of all the different things, I don't know, it just clicked. It just clicked in me. I can't even explain it. There wasn't like a specific thing. I just had time to just sit.
And in doing that, you made one of the best country songs I've heard in a long time, Sorry's Don't Work Anymore, where you like play the villain and you've been an a-hole in the relationship. Then of course, in the typical country song, that's when you go crying your beer about, like, but like some of the greatest, like Merle Haggard songs, like Misery and Gin, about like messing up relationships, are about this very thing. And so I want to know about Sorry's Don't Work Anymore. And, you know, because I personally love it, especially when female artists take on the role of being the one who messed up. Because I think there can, you know, in mainstream country, there's a tendency to be like, you know, I've been wronged and I'm going to kick your ass, you know.
Yeah.
But like to have been the one doing wrong takes some, I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for saying it's one of the best country songs you've heard in a while.
Yes, I love it. It's just like, I was like, oh, Lord, she's been awful.
You know, I love songs like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like it's so many songs that talk about like being heartbroken, and I write them too. I don't want all my songs to be about being the heartbroken person. I don't want that because I don't think that that's real life. either, because like I've screwed up so many times. I don't think I've cheated on anybody, but I don't think. Let me think about it. But I know.
Let's have some real talk now. Wait, what?
I mean, it wasn't cheating. We weren't together anymore. Like,
yeah, you're on a break.
Exactly. That counts. That counts. If we say we're going to stop, then that counts.
Yeah.
But I know what it's like to be the person that's cheated on. And I wanted to kind of try and put myself in that position to see, like, maybe, you know, what they thought, what they felt when they were doing wrong against me. But, you know, I feel like artists like Carrie Underwood, she has such a great balance between being heartbroken and the one breaking hearts. You know, I love that. You know, she'll sing a song about killing somebody.
Yeah.
And then she'll do Before He Cheats. You know, I love stuff like that. I like that balance. I think Miranda Lambert does it as well. Maren does it as well. I mean, Sugarland does it well. I mean, it's just so many female artists that aren't afraid to, you know, not be the damsel. That's badass.
Well, and I think like what you just said, I connect with female artists and songwriters who are three-dimensional and let that be shown mm-hmm. and let that be out there, as opposed to just like you're saying, the damsel in distress, or she's just perfectly sweet all the time. And probably part of that for me goes back to growing up in the church. Mm-hmm. And I mean, let's be real, I love Jesus still and am really active in my church. But like there was this thing growing up for me where I felt like I had to be the perfect little Christian girl and do everything just exactly right to be loved, and like, oh my gosh, if I made a mistake, like God's gonna be mad at me or something, or if I say a cuss word, or I mean, like whatever it was. And so I think like that's just not real life. Like you're going to make mistakes, you're also going to be incredibly strong, you're also going to, you know, do things that probably no one's ever going to find out about publicly if I can help it, but but you know, like I said it, but like, I'm so drawn to the women that are honest, that it's like, we are strong and also vulnerable and we can say what we want to say and that's okay. As opposed to just like a very one-dimensional character. Like that's never been something I've connected with.
And I've just never like connected with people who are like really purist at heart. Like there's just this straight, narrow path to doing, you know, any one thing. I've never been that kind of person. And I don't know, for me, when I even thought about this EP, I thought it was important to put a song like Stars on here because I had compassion and I had thoughts and prayers, which is a song about mass shootings. Like, I don't want it to be like, I'm trying to say, this is the way we're supposed to live. It's not that, you know, so I need to throw a wrench into the pile and like, no, I screw up often. Maybe not me in this song, but I've done other things, and you'll hear those songs later on too.
Girl, I can't wait. I can't wait. I'll probably be like, yep, lift it. Yep.
Yep.
Brittany, I feel like we need like a glass of wine on another night, and like when we're not being recorded.
Yes. Oh, I would so love that.
Yes.
I'm drinking scotch now. I mean, if you want to grab your wine.
I know. Well, I don't want to open a bottle right now. But when you mentioned thoughts and prayers, when, you know, that particular song, one, it really, I think it's so important, first of all. But I think one of the things that I've gotten frustrated with probably as a Christian, I know you grew up in the church too, so I'm wondering if this is part of where this song came from, is that, you know, so often like people are like, well, just pray about it, or I'm sending you thoughts and prayers, or God's going to take care of it. And what I ultimately believe is God will take care of it. But there are also, like, he gives us a brain and gives us wisdom to actually step forward and take action to help other people and to stand up for what's right.
Yeah.
And to look at other countries and say, hey, why doesn't this happen elsewhere? That goes back to your passport comment earlier, you know, it's like, we're the only country in the world where this happens of this magnitude all the time. I mean, I and the video that you made is so powerful, but the insane thing about watching it was, I was like, I remembered most of them, but like, there was some of them, the mass shootings, I didn't even remember. Mm-hmm. And that's insane.
Yeah. I mean, kind of even just going back on Ashley's statement, we use spirituality as a scapegoat so many times. Like, in this case, something that needs actual policy change. We want to toss prayers. I'm not saying they're not effective, but it's like we need something else too. And it requires something on our end. But that's where the song came from. I wrote it with Brock Heumann, who sang it with me, and a friend of ours named Olivia Yokobonis. We were at a songwriting camp in LA last summer, I think. And it was hosted by this incredible creative community called Common Hymnal. And I've written a lot of the songs that I've kind of like a lot of protest stuff I've written with them. But we were writing and I kind of brought this idea to them, like, hey guys, I was on a plane on my way here and I just thought about mass shootings and, you know, I would like to write something around the topic of thoughts and prayers. And I brought line. And we just kind of went from there. And I didn't think they would actually, like, go for it. I thought that they would probably want to start something else. So, like, in my mind, I'm thinking I'm showing them this verse just for the sake of just showing it, but not really thinking that, like, we will all dig it and kind of dig in really heavy. But we did. And I'm proud of what we did. And I kind of battled a little bit about putting it out right now, especially while we're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, putting out a song about something that's not happening right now could be the thing that no one's really asking for. But one, I don't want to do things that are trendy, especially something as horrific as mass shootings. It shouldn't be trendy, you know, it shouldn't at all. And also, I mean, there's a lot of people where this time of being away from a loved one is not temporary like it is for others who haven't experienced that sort of ordeal. You know, right now we're all quarantined, well, not all. Some people are quarantined and or trying to just take safety precautions, especially as it pertains to holidays in terms of whether or not we go home and see our family, see our closest friends. And I mean, even yesterday, the writing session I did with Marin, Jason and Amanda, we got tested and not quarantined until it was time to write. Like, I plan my hangs now. I'm like, hey, you want to hang together? Cool. I'll get tested and, you know, I'll quarantine for 4 or 5 days, whatever, until it's time to see you. But this time is temporary for us,
yeah.
You know, but specifically for people who have lost someone to a mass shooting, to gun violence, it's not temporary. Like, you know, that person is gone. And for me, I think a few weeks ago when I saw Dave Chappelle on SNL, mm-hmm. and he said something about mass shootings, which you hear in the beginning of the Thoughts and Prayers video you just mentioned, Hunter. I've kind of held on to that because I was really like leery for like a while about putting that song out right now. But when he said that, I was like, dude, this has been on my mind for months. I think we need to just go ahead and do it. And it might not get a whole bunch of plays. Not a whole lot of people probably listen to it. And I understand as well, I'm a new artist. But also, it's really hard to just manage our own shit that we have right now, you know? Being quarantined, parents trying to teach their kids and do Zoom work from home. And just, it's hard right now. That's like it could be just another thing on people's plate, but I felt like I should still do it. And I'm really glad and grateful that we did.
Yeah, I am too. And I think in this year, in a pandemic, never lived through a pandemic before, but also, you know, around the time that George Floyd was murdered, a friend of mine who I went to college with, and she just moved to LA, her name's Alita. And she said, you're about to hear Black people talk in a way that you've not heard them talk before. Your Black friends. Mm. And so that was really like, okay, it's time for me to listen with fresh ears. And so I think in this time, we also, once we get back to life as we know it, we don't want to, I don't want to go back to thinking about race like I did before. Mm-hmm. And so in the same vein, I think maybe now is a great time because people are looking at things in different ways or maybe open to them because we're living in through unprecedented times. I hope so. Like last season on the show, we actually had a Columbine survivor on our show. And there is actually a program at OnSite here in Middle Tennessee for survivors of mass shootings. And the fact that there has to be in America a program for survivors of mass shootings, because it's such a widespread,
help them deal with the trauma.
But it's such a widespread issue. It's just like, wow.
Well, and I think so often with the trauma, like Hunter and I also talk a lot about mental health and trauma. And that was part of that episode of the podcast, was bringing awareness to survivors of mass shootings and their families and the trauma that they endure for a long time. Like I was talking to a friend of mine last week that
she was at Route 91.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's been, wait, 2 years or 3 years?
Oh, three. It's about three.
And, you know, she said that she was talking to a friend that was also there. And she said, you know, I just think, like, I'm not having the same reactions that I was then. But I, there's just some things lately where I feel like I might need to go get some therapy. And her friend said, well, but aren't you over that now? And she's like, no. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of the differences. We started talking about the differences in the way her friend that was also there handled that trauma versus how she's handling that trauma and the way it's affected her emotionally and mentally. And here, you know, 3 years later, feeling like, okay, maybe I really need to go spend some time and get some good therapy mm-hmm. around this, because it did change some things in my life. Like, even from a chemicals perspective, she was talking about how there's certain things she doesn't remember, and the way mm-hmm. her memory is, her long-term memory isn't as great as it used to be. And she's like, I think there's something from that trauma that is blocking in my brain. And so there's just so many effects that we really don't talk about, because it is so hard for people that have been survivors to talk about, or for those that have lost people too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything you're saying right now, just, it resonates with me. I remember the first night that me and Brock and Olivia, who wrote Thoughts and Prayers with us, the first night we sang this song, it was like a song share, like a songwriting camp for like people who don't know. It's when several songwriters come together and get together in like groups of like two, three, or sometimes four people. And you just spend a few hours kind of, you know, writing a song together. And afterwards, usually there's like a song share, like where everyone kind of comes together and shares a song that they wrote that day. And you just do that for like, for us, it was like 2 or 3 days that we were all together doing that. And at the end of the night, when we wrote our song, we were sharing our song, and it was a guy there who was coming just for the song share, because he was friends with some of the other people, the other songwriters that were there. And after we sang our song, he just starts, I watched him cry, but I remember talking to him, and he was telling me how one of his close friends lost her life during the mass shooting down at the concert in Vegas, which I think is what you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Route 91.
Yeah, okay. He lost a friend there. And so that moment for me, it became less about chasing down a song, mm-hmm. which you can kind of get wrapped into when you're trying to think about lyricism and how do you put words together, how do you rhyme, and kind of get caught up in the technicality of a song. And it took the song and it put a face on it for me. And I think that was a really valuable moment for me personally, in terms of viewing this song, not just as something you just craft together, but it not that I ever thought that, but it puts it in a different perspective when you realize that song, it brings back specific memories for somebody else, or it goes to a certain place in their psyche and in their heart. That meant so much to me. It was a very humanizing moment. And I honestly wish so often that the things that we experience as creatives, even as you guys, getting to hear people's stories and asking the questions that cause people to have to dig deep and not just talk about the surface stuff, I wish that everyone could experience that.
Yeah.
I wish people had an outlet, but the typical person I don't know always has that outlet. As a creative, we're constantly diving and trying to find the real stuff and trying to find the real meaning. And sometimes when I'm not writing, I don't do that as often. I really wish people could have, I wish more people could have that experience.
Mm.
That opportunity to just see humanity in a different way.
Well, and I think too, it's like in sharing your stories, like us sharing our stories. I mean, that was the thing when we started this podcast for both Hunter and I. It was like, we want to be able to talk about the real stuff. We want to get uncomfortable. We want to bring a lot of light and joy and fun, obviously. And we have a great time, but we also want to be able to talk about things that we feel like matter and not be restricted. Yeah. And that our guests can talk about things that matter to them and not be restricted. And I think that's where we've both learned so much over the last couple of years in doing this podcast, and also hope that people are listening. But like, just listening and learning from someone else's experience that may not have been your own. And then can that allow us to dig a little bit further into our humanity and find compassion for another person that we may not have had compassion for before?
That's so well said.
So I know that you were classically trained. You grew up going to art schools in Baltimore, and you studied all kinds of music. So you studied, I guess, classical, opera, jazz, pop, I guess. I want to ask about your vocal style as we hear you singing. It's very, I have a feeling that you can do a lot more dynamically than you're doing on these songs. But that's exciting to me because I'm excited to hear what you grow into or how you use your voice in different ways over the course of your career, because I know that you have all of that training in your back pocket. But I want to know about just kind of finding this space that you're singing from on these songs. How did that develop?
I honestly, Honor, I don't know.
It just happened organically.
I think honestly, we chose songs where it wasn't a whole lot that needed to be done vocally. Like, while I can do all these different things with my voice stylistically, I think for whatever reason, I didn't notice until we went into the studio, I chose songs where it didn't require a whole lot of, you know, kind of showing all that, you know, I've got in that sense. And I really do like to, like, I'm big on placement. I'm good on knowing where to put a run, if a run is necessary. On a song like Stars Don't Work No More, I can't think of a place where I would put, you know, or want to put, you know, more than just a few, you know, runs. I don't know. I think it's the songs that we chose. I kind of just went with those. But I have other songs where it's like I'm doing acrobats, you know, with my vocal cords. And it's so fun and it's so, so dope. And I'm not afraid. Like, I'm not ashamed of that part of me at all.
Yeah.
I grew up in church. I think the best singers in the world come from Black church. I do think that. I do know that. I believe that.
Amen.
And I'm a product of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a product of that world. And so I love it and I'll do it. It's just the songs that we chose. Honestly, I don't think that they kind of required it. I think it would have taken away from the lyrics in a way that I don't want to have happen.
Yeah.
I really wanted this EP to show that I'm a songwriter and that I can carry my shit.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me of a conversation we had two episodes ago with Patrick Droney. Do you know Patrick? His music, Patrick Droney?
I know who he is now. And oh my gosh.
Yeah.
His voice.
Yeah.
Can y'all do a song together? That would bring me
so bad.
I would love to do a song with him.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. In hearing his story, it's just, you know, he has been studying music like you for a long, long time. So I think in my saying that you're not doing everything that you can do vocally, I think it's a sign of maturity that you don't do everything you can do. I remember when I first heard Trisha Yearwood's 1998 album, Where Your Road Leads, and there were several songs where she was just very quiet the entire time. And it was, the restraint was so elegant. I just want to say that you're pretty far along as an artist on your first EP to, you know, to be at the point where you're making the artistic decision. You're in service of the art. That being said, I do look forward to big vocal moments because I love big vocal moments myself. I love to sing loudly.
Hunter would like you to record some songs with massive vocal moments so then he can recreate those moments for his dogs on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Cool. So Hunter wants me to be Whitney Houston and Beyonce and and Trisha Yearwood all wrapped in one, and I'm here for it. Okay. My favorite singer in the world, Whitney Houston, and Mariah. So I'm with it. Also, if I'm honest, like, I'm processing, I'm realizing this as I'm speaking it. My introduction to country music, of course, it sounded like a quartet, as I mentioned earlier, but I was so drawn to the lyrics that if I'm honest, like, I can focus so much on that sometimes that I forget that I need to, like, sing my ass off. You know, and if I can, I forget that sometimes. I can get so caught up in the lyrics and the lyrical process that I'll forget, like, actually, like, people will hear a song and they'll think, oh, these are awesome lyrics, but they'll think, oh my gosh, she's saying. And so I forget that sometimes, if I'm honest. Like, when my introduction, like I said, to country was, I was really, really drawn to one, the harmonies, but I was really drawn to the lyrics. And I have to do more of what I've been doing, which is just finding ways to connect all of my musical worlds together. That's always what I'm trying to do. And this is great. Thank you. Everything you just said to me is like, I do know. need to try and sing my ass.
Well, no, but that's the thing though. Like Brittany, you're one of these artists that I'm excited to watch over time because I know that you have a lot to say, but also a lot that you know, musically and stylistically that you can expand because it's all in there.
Well, amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Listen, Whitney Houston to me will always be one of the greatest singers of all time. I mean, she's what made me like fall in love with music because I would just sing every song of hers into a hairbrush in my mirror.
As more time goes on, I realize and listening to her, I'm like, there's never been anybody like this. And the fact that live, she never sang the same runs. She was constantly, I didn't appreciate that until the last few years. Because for me, watching live Whitney videos, I was all like, well, you didn't do it like the record. But she was like constantly reinterpreting her songs on the fly all the time. It's insane.
You're absolutely right. And honestly, I take that for granted because the world that I come from, that's literally everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's everybody. That was actually one of the things that I learned. One of the first things I learned when I came to Nashville, how so many things, including how people sing, sometimes can be so systematic and that you'll hear the song the same way, you know, every time you hear it. And that was like almost like a culture shock for me because I grew up in church where everything is literally improv.
Whenever you're moved by the spirit is what happens.
Yeah, somebody that might scream, you know, and it just out of nowhere. And so that was like definitely one of the things I had to learn. One of the other things, I'm laughing as I even just think about it. One of the other things that was like complete culture shock to me was when I first moved here and I would play around and kind of, you know, sing and do all the different things. People just sit and they look at you and they don't say anything until like maybe like a big moment of the song. And or at the end of like a chorus, you know, and it's like a really catchy lyric, you might hear a woo, you know, every now and then or something like that. But that was a complete, like, that was a shock for me. It took me a long time to get used to that. I'm like, I'm used to people throwing stuff at me. like literally in churches where I grew up and in places where I was like, where I grew up and would sing at, like, people will like bring money and just drop it at you. Or people will be like, don't make me throw that shoe at you. Like, people will say that out loud, like audibly, like just say different things. Like if you don't sing, like I'm so used to that. Well, now I've gotten used to this, but like people would just yell at you. And if you didn't hear anything when you would sing, whether it was a church, a club, whatever, like if no one responded, if you didn't hear anything from the audience, it meant you weren't really doing a good job. Yeah. And so when I moved here, it took me a while to realize I was actually maybe probably doing a decent job. It's just the culture is different. People just look at you. And then at the end, they say, I was so moved when I heard you sing that song. I was like, really? Because you didn't move at all.
You're like, listen, I would have liked to have seen that in your face.
Yes. Look, Mary, you didn't move at all. I looked at you when I was singing that song. You did not flinch. Okay. You didn't do anything.
And so I love you said Mary and not Karen because I thought Karen.
No, we say Karen for other things.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's fair. Now, I'd like to make a disclaimer. We know some amazing Karens, like Karen Fairchild. Like,
oh, I love her. My aunt is named Karen. I love her.
I have a cousin named Karen.
I said Mary because I talked to my grandmother yesterday and we finally decided to make a standing appointment to talk on the phone. Oh. So, like, her name is at the forefront of my brain.
Is her name Mary?
Yeah, my grandmother's Mary
Jeanette. Oh, my granny was Mary.
My grandmother was Mary Lois, and my mom is Mary Susan. I mean, I have a random question because you were talking about people throwing stuff at you. What was the craziest thing that someone threw, like when you were in church or wherever?
I was at a club, and I was singing, I think I was singing a John Legend song.
Mm.
And it was a club, like a lounge kind of area. So it's hard to describe because I don't think we have those here in Nashville. And so I forget that they exist in other like places.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a lounge kind of area. And someone threw a shoe. That was really nice. Like, and it was a nice shoe. Like, I think it was like, it wasn't a red bottom, but it was like some like fancy like Nordstrom like shoe.
It wasn't a Louis Vuitton or
it wasn't a red bottom. It wasn't.
What's the red bottom?
Louis Vuitton.
Oh, I was right. Okay.
So they threw this really nice looking shoe and then at the end she came and got her shoe. She's like, let me get my shoe back. But girl, you sang that song.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, thank you so much. Thank you. And like, I'm like kind of shy. Like, it's nice to like talk like this. I can deal with this, but usually I'm just like, I'm really like closed up in spaces. I'm like that person that wants to be in the corner, you know, in a crowded room. I'm that person who doesn't want to talk, or I just want to observe and watch everybody else talk. So I was just kind of like shy. And like, I guess she, like, when she saw me sing, she wouldn't have thought that, I guess. And so I think my shyness and my social awkwardness kind of threw her off. Cause I was like, thank you. Like, no, it's a good thing, girl. I mean, I wasn't trying to hurt you. She was like, no, I believe you. I'm just, thank you. And I just didn't know what to say, but she was fine. It was fine. I loved it. The shoe was my favorite. Money was also nice too.
Yeah. Well, listen, Brittany, if you want to throw your shoes off during shows, I feel we need that. One of the best shows I ever saw in my life was Patti LaBelle. And she, you know, she throws her shoes off and it went as high. She got so much air that it hit it like went up to the second balcony when she threw her shoe off. Like she was just throwing it, and she threw a mic stand. If you want to throw your shoes off.
What are you bringing out, Brittany? You're pulling up.
I have my vinyl next to me. Did she sing this song when she
was of course she did. Of course she did. New Attitude. You just got New Attitude up. Oh, my Lord. I love that song.
I got this at a thrift store here in Nashville, and I got it for one of my best friends, Langston, because he loves Patti. He loves Patti so much. When we were in college, when the pies came out, the Patti pies.
Oh, yeah.
He made us drive to like four different Walmarts.
We went looking for them too. They were sold out everywhere. Did y'all find one?
We were in Murfreesboro. So it was like, we could drive from, I think we drove to like Smyrna or like, I don't know, but it wasn't in Murfreesboro. We drove around. Actually, if I think about it, I'm a little mad because he didn't have a license at the time. So I was the one driving, but he was very adamant about us getting his pie. And now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, dude, I was the one driving. He was really adamant about me driving all around town.
But it was for Patti. It was good.
Oh, it was good. And it was right after that that guy had sang his song.
The video, the viral Patti! Patti!
And then when he does a high note.
Yeah. It's the Oh My Own Patti LaBelle edition.
Yes.
So before we saw Patti, my friend Joseph Connor, he got I think it was some Patti LaBelle baked goods. Mm-hmm. So we had we did have a Patti dish before we saw Patti.
Ooh.
But let me tell you something.
It's making me hungry. Even though I ate a box of mac and cheese like an hour.
Yeah, but Patti LaBelle, I have a DVD, Patti LaBelle One Night Only. So we can workshop it, honey. We can. Because I'm all like, let's get some elements of Patti LaBelle in your live show. That's what the CMA Awards needs, damn it.
Yes.
I agree. Listen, I am so for, I cannot wait until I turn on the CMA Awards one day and there is someone squalling from the heavens all the way down to that stage.
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot wait. I cannot. Oh, you have no idea how that's going to like do my heart good. I just want to be an audience to watch. I just want to watch and just gleam, be like, sing the damn song. You better squall for your life. I'm gonna be that person. I'm gonna be that person from back home in Baltimore where they just yelling at you while you do a song. Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, that's nice. I'm ready.
And kick off your shoes, honey. Oh.
And I hope it's like a ballad that they sing. So it'd be so inappropriate for me to just be yelling at them. They're like singing this really soft. Oh, not soft. They sing this like power ballad. And the whole time I'm like, yes, sing, bitch. Oh,
come on.
I get that one.
Sometimes I do that in church.
If you can't do it in church, I don't know where you can do it at.
That's right.
Yeah. And I mean, I need to be set free. Lower.
You might need to do some praying. That little time with the Lord.
Oh, I had some this morning and then this afternoon, but
it's a two prayer kind of day.
I'm talking about like big performer. I really just want to see Patti LaBelle again. And so Brittany, if you just give me some.
I am. I'm gonna write one for you and then I'm gonna send it to you. I'm gonna write it and I'm gonna send it to you. Like give you the raw voice memo. You know, I'm going to do it.
I mean, I just love to sing really loud and high. Like when I'm by myself, I just love to see how obnoxiously loud and high I can sing. Like it's Patti. Like not, Patti.
It's a good thing you're not in like an apartment, Hunter. Like that you were.
I've had
in
the
your
cops called
house.
On me several times when I lived in a condo.
Dude, I don't know how my neighbors haven't called the cops. Well, probably because I kind of, I don't live in the hood, but it's kind of. But my neighbors have never, like, done it. I've had rehearsals in here. I've done live streams in here. I play music at 9 o'clock in the morning through my studio speakers. Like, I have no idea. Like, wow. They've never knocked on my door, said anything. But they also keep me up at night. So, like, I feel like it's a mutual.
It's a balance.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a balance.
It's a give and take.
Yeah,
it's also Nashville. Like we have a house over here in Cleveland Park, and our neighbor plays drums, and it's just kind of like, you know what? There's gonna be band rehearsals if you live in down in Nashville. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things. It's just you're gonna hear music.
True.
Y'all remember when people moved to Music Row and then they got mad because it was music at all the bars? It's like, what do you expect? You live directly across the street.
And you know that building went up so fast, that high rise, that they didn't put in good soundproofing. So, hate to tell you, you're hearing the tin roof at all hours. You're welcome.
Yeah, basically. Like, this is what you chose for yourself.
Ah, the tin roof. I had some good
row.
Welcome to Music City, hon.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, Brittany Spencer, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to watch your journey because it's just, as I said, I love it, but I'm also excited for the future. Musically, creatively.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. Y'all are so supportive, and thank you for taking time to talk to new artists. Thank you for taking time to pull out the real stories in people, the stuff that media training doesn't teach you how to dodge. I've had it. Andrew probably wishes I would do it now, but.
Well, we both do media training.
We both teach media training, so. It's funny because I teach people how to avoid things a lot. And then I'm like, when I get an interview with them, I'm like, so let's talk about it.
Yeah.
What's the one you don't want people to know about you? Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the real stories. I've been known to make people cry, so it's fine. But, you know.
It's okay. I mean, I just feel like that's life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the real. It's where people connect. But we love you. And so... Like, please come back anytime.
Well, thank you, Brittany, girl. We're going to, you're a season finale, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yay! Thank y'all so much.
Last year was Dave Barnes, and he was an MTSU as well. So this is our second year in a row of MTSU grads.
Go Blue Raiders.
Thank y'all. Thank y'all so much.
This one's so fun.
Brittany, oh, my Lord, thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your humor. Thank you for... You're inside.
Just being you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being you. You guys go follow. Well, first of all, go get Brittany's EP Compassion. Mm-hmm. Spend some time with it. It's so good. And also follow her on social media because I love seeing artists sit down in, you know, it's like we've seen a lot during this pandemic because no one could perform live, just breaking out the guitar and playing a song in their living room. And she does that a lot. And I love it.
Just so grateful for her. Thank you, Brittany.
Yes.
And that's it for this
season. Happy 2020, y'all.
We made it, y'all.
We have made it to the end of 2020. I mean, thank God we've made it to the end of 2020.
What an unprecedented year in everybody's life, but...
Yeah, isn't that the truth? We hope that you guys are safe and healthy, that during this holiday, you can take a deep breath for you and find a lot of joy. That's what we hope. Or I hope. I feel like you hope the same thing.
I do hope the same thing. Yeah. I just, you know, I think we have a lot at the end of the tunnel. We have the vaccine coming and hopefully life returns to normal, but just continue to follow Dr. Fauci's suggestions until then.
Until then. All right. You guys can find us on social media at All Our Favorite People. You can find me at Ashley Eicher. You can find Hunter at Nashville HK. You know, if you don't mind, maybe for Christmas, just go in and rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes.
Share it with your friends. Just be like a Christmas gift to us.
Yeah. If you like what we're doing, if you're a fan of the show, that's a great way to support us. Also, we do have our Patreon. So I know that you'll hear that commercial. Go check that out. We'll be updating that. We do update that. I do.
We do. We have a lot of things going on, so it's not always our first priority. Let's just be honest about it.
We'll be honest, yes. But thank you so much for our Patreon subscribers as well.
Yes, we love you guys. Happy New Year, and here's to a hopefully a little more relaxing 2021.
Yes. Thank you.